Time now for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings at this time, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, the editor and the publisher of the Timberjay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Morning, Marshall. Thanks for being with us.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, Monday is the end of the 2021, the main session for the Minnesota legislature. Lots of people with lots of different opinions, especially the state Senate. There is some controversy brewing there about funding and car emissions. Can you kind of fill us in on what you covered this week?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, one of the big questions right now as we head towards the end of the session is, will our Minnesota state parks be open beginning July 1? And that's because, as it stands today, we have some Republican senators led by Bill Ingebrigtsen of Alexandria, and he has told House Senate conferees that he will not support any funding for agencies like the Department of Natural Resources, the Pollution Control Agency, the Minnesota Zoo, or and other environmentally related agencies, unless the MPCA agrees to withdraw its proposal for clean car emission standards. He made this initial demand at a conference committee on May 4th, and then since then he's backtracked a little bit. He said he would accept a two-year delay on the new rules, and I assume they're hoping that maybe a new election will take the new rules completely off the table. But if Ingebrigtsen follows through on this threat, obviously major portions of the state government, you know, including the DNR, would shut down effective July 1. We'd have essentially another partial government shutdown. And, of course, this would come, you know, right at just ahead of the 4th of July weekend when, you know, normally Minnesota state parks are jammed. And, of course, lots of folks are interested in getting out and exploring the outdoors these days with the COVID still hanging in there. So, you know, this could definitely have a big impact on Minnesotans. At this point, DFL negotiators on the conference committee have rejected Ingebrigtsen's demands, and that's what's kind of set up this funding impasse. And at the root of the conflict is that the state is currently falling behind targets which the legislature set back in 2007 for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. The state's made considerable progress in converting its electric production to cleaner fuels like wind and solar, but the state's shown little progress in reducing emissions in the transportation sector, and that's why the MPCA has pushed this proposal forward. And essentially, what happened here would be that under this new standard, it would make it would require car dealerships and car manufacturers to stock more electric vehicles or zero emission vehicles, and most of those right now are electric. You know, in their lots, and you know, there's been some opposition of the dealerships don't want to have to be required to stock anything; they want to base it solely on customer demand. But it's shown that states that have adopted the same kind of rule, which was originally adopted in California, but about a dozen other states have since implemented the same rule, and they found that it does tend to increase the amount of consumer choice for electric vehicles when the standard is in place, and that's where most of these electric vehicles are now going. It's hard to find one. If you want to buy an electric vehicle, you're going to have to hunt far and wide to find them. So, you know, having a rule in place like this might give folks more options in that. So, at this point, you know, Governor Walz, I think it was back in the fall of 2019, he had, you know, initiated this process to establish these new rules. And so the MPCA has been going through that rulemaking process for a while. They've had public input. They've had about 10,000 comments, the vast majority in favor of adopting these new rules. An administrative law judge looked at the rules here recently, and just last week determined that they were reasonable and needed, and that the Walz administration had the authority to enact them. One of the concerns that Republicans have had is they said, well, the legislature should be able to weigh in on these new rules. But, you know, essentially the administration is saying, or the Walz administration is saying, well, you know, when the legislature passed this, legislation back in 2007, you know, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, that, you know, they're simply taking steps to enact or enforce that law that was, passed back in 2007. It's worth mentioning that law was actually signed by Governor Tim Pawlenty. You know, so back in 2007, addressing climate change was actually a bipartisan thing, and of course now it's become exactly the opposite. It's become a very partisan point of divide right now. So at this point, it's not clear how this issue is going to be resolved. If the GOP follows through on its threat, it's definitely going to impact many businesses, I think, in northern Minnesota that rely on the traffic to state parks in the summer. So we'll be watching this one.
This reminds me that, you know, we should always be looking for sources of information and not relying on your buddies on social media, because I have seen people posting that if this is enacted, that car dealerships won't be able to sell used cars anymore. So it'll ruin the auto industry. And that's not part of it. Yes, yeah. So I just want to get that out there.
Nobody's going to be required to purchase an electric vehicle under this at all. Yeah,
right.
I mean, it's still going to be a relatively small percentage, but it would mean that people who are interested would have more choices.
Yeah. Well, I saw the allusion to that on a Republican lawmaker's Facebook,
okay,
and then it kind of spun out of control. But it's good to know what's going on there, and we'll see what happens by Monday.
Sounds good.
Let's move on to Ely. The Ely School Board has a debate over a book. What's happening?
Yeah, this book, it's called I'm Still Here, Black Dignity in a World Made for Whiteness. This book is quite well known. It actually spent 16 weeks on the New York Times bestsellers list. It's written by the author and activist Austin Channing Brown, and it has been part of the high school English curriculum this year, and it has definitely generated some controversy with parents and some students who say that the book is sort of racist, that it is anti-white people, and that it's filled with hate speech at various points. And so they have gone to the school board and are asking the school board to prohibit the use of this book in the English curriculum. And at this point, the school board has not really been sure how to address this one, to be perfectly honest. This is a debate that they have not really had to deal with in the past. For the most part, they would rather see this issue handled, you know, kind of below their level. I mean, you know, typically they'd like to see maybe some discussion with the teacher, and then, you know, it could go up to the principal level. And I think the board would like to see this handled, you know, administratively rather than having to come up to them. But the interesting thing about this, though, is that it has generated a lot of discussion around this whole issue of both the book and sort of what it's talking about. And, you know, if that's what the purpose of a book is, especially this kind of a book, and I think what the purpose of this book was to try to expand the knowledge of students in Ely. And Ely is a community that's very, has very few people of color. And so they don't really get exposed very often to those perspectives. And, you know, this book is intended to do that. In fact, it was a group in Ely, it's a community group called Empower, which had donated funds to the school to help purchase this book because they thought this would be a good way to expand students' exposure to perspectives from people of color. And, in a sense, this has definitely generated some critical discussion on both sides of the issue, and it's been a good debate. So maybe the book has achieved some of its purpose here. But at this point, some people just want it to go away because they're not comfortable with this kind of a conversation.
Okay. Well, you'll keep us updated on this, right?
For sure.
Well, it is practically a holiday in Minnesota. It's opening fishing tomorrow. Tell us how you think the weekend will go.
I think it's going to be a very good fishing opener, one of the best in years up in our neck of the woods. We had an early ice out, and we had some of the warmer weather that came in just towards the end of this week has probably helped warm up the water temps a little bit. I spoke to several guides this week, and they're all expecting plenty of action when anglers head out. So that's good news. I think that early ice out really helped. The walleye should be all done spawning, and so they should be hungry. And, Lake Vermilion also is sitting on one of the highest walleye counts in decades. I think we talked about this earlier in the year. You know, the DNR conducts test netting on the lake every year to monitor the fish population, and its walleye catches last fall were the highest in more than 35 years. So I think folks are pretty optimistic that people will be catching plenty of fish out there. Interest is also intense up in our area because of the closure of the Canadian border last year over the coronavirus, and that's redirected a lot of anglers who used to, go to Canada to some of our lakes up here, Vermilion, Cab Togama, places like that. And guides I've spoke to say they've never had so many bookings. I mean, a lot of them are booked solid already right into July. So there's going to be a lot of people, I think, out on the water. And the weather's supposed to be nice. So, what more could you ask for from a fishing opener? I mean, we're not getting snowed on.
Right.
That's good.
I wish that was a joke, but that's happened.
Many times.
And, I mean, man, we really need that infusion of visitors and dollars into our small town. So I think this is going to be great.
No doubt.
It's Marshall Helmberger. It's the Border News Roundup. You can read and see more at timberjay.com. Marshall, have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Heidi.
Thanks.